Welcome to the very first episode of the Whitchurch Silk Mill podcast, where we'll be following the fascinating journey from thread to woven cloth here at the mill. We'll also be introducing some special guests to give their views on everything from sustainable or conscious textiles to producing ribbons for feature films. I'm your host, Zoe Umpleby, and I'll be joined by two of our weavers, Shannon Bai and Olivia Goldsmith. And if you haven't already, do check us out on our website, Instagram and Facebook. So we are here in this beautiful mill building and I'm joined by our weaver tackler, Shannon. So Shannon, can you tell us just a little bit about this wonderful building?
This beautiful Georgian building we're standing in right now has been many things over the years, but currently we're standing in a living museum where it still weaves today the silk thread. It comes from silk thread onto a warping mill and down into woven cloth, but we'll talk through all the different processes as we go through the episodes. But for now, just a little bit, it takes it bit at a time, comes down to being woven cloth and then out into the big wide world.
And we've also got a really interesting history as well. So we've been around since 1815, so we're 200 years old. We're the oldest silk mill in the country and still weaving, as Shannon said, today, which is absolutely fantastic. But we started off as an iron foundry and then became a silk throwing mill in 1817. A wonderful owner called William Maddock took on the mill and had some massive alterations to the building as well. So we've got three floors now, which is really exciting, whereas previously it was two, and started silk throwing, which is the twisting of threads together, and now into weaving, which is fantastic. So and that is where we started our weaving journey. Lots of periods of booms and busts over the years, but one of the big, I suppose, snippets of the history is the Hyde family. So they were the last owners of the mill and they brought in the power looms, which Shannon and Olivia still use today. And they had all sorts of fascinating clients. We used to weave linings for Burberry coats. We used to have legal gowns. We also prepared the threads for Princess Diana's wedding dress as well. So some really, really famous characters in the history. And then whizzing through right to kind of the modern day, in 1985, we were rescued by the Hampshire Buildings Preservation Trust, and in 1990 it was opened as a museum, as it's still running today, and 2018 we had our big restoration. So the museum that you see today is all from the restoration from 2018, and we're open and a living, as Shannon said, a living history museum for people to come and visit and see these wonderful machines working.
There's some really interesting history about the mill there. It's had a long history and lots of different interesting things with lots of different interesting people. And it's a combination of lots of different roles that make up the mill and make it what it is. So, I mean, you would have had a winder and you would have had a warper, you would have had a weaver and you would have had a tackler. Obviously, today it's different and we've got multiple different roles for different things.
Could you just explain a little bit about your job as weaver tackler?
Yep, so originally it would have been weaver and tackler, and you would have been one or the other. But it's a lot easier now for us to be doing both roles together instead of having two individuals to do the same separate job. We can do both together. So I'm no longer just weaver. I'm weaver, I'm warper, and I'm tackler. So tackler is you tackle the things to do with the looms. So if anything goes wrong with the looms, the tackler's there to fix the loom, sort out the mechanics of it. The tackler would also change any of the information that the loom has in, like, that tells it how to pick up the shafts to weave the threads. They'll change the information for that, so the tappet blocks and the dobby chains, all that kind of technical information. So the more the running of the loom is down to the tackler, and then the weaving of it is then the weaver. Well, now my job includes both.
Wow, that is quite a job you've got there. It's almost two parts to one job, isn't it, really? That's quite something, isn't it? So how do you think life in the mill now compares to what it was in the past? How is the role? Is it different at all or is it the same?
Yeah, I feel like it's changed quite a lot. And like I say, it's just kind of put it all together. So rather than it separate individuals, so warpers, weavers, tacklers, we're trying to take on all together. So it very much, and it would have been like the weaver would have just consistently been working on one loom, maybe having two running at once. And then if anything went wrong with their loom, they'd be waiting for the tackler because they couldn't tackle it themselves. They'd have to wait for the tackler to come up and work with them with that. I mean, also they didn't, it wasn't a museum, so they didn't have people coming in to watch them, have to get engaged with visitors, which we love, of course, so, but it's learning that skill to be able to talk to somebody else. Try not to be overcomplicated as well, because it is a complicated process. So you've got to try and make it so you're not filling someone's head with so much information they don't understand. So you've got to try and find that balance. Then you've got to try and find the balance of being able to still do your job and not muck anything up at the same time as delighting visitors as they come round. But I've never found it a burden, because I really enjoy speaking to people about something that I'm passionate about. So yeah, I mean, I suppose it's changed quite a bit, I suppose, in that aspect, to way back when it was a factory to now, because they wouldn't have had visitors coming around to delight. So yeah, a bit different.
Absolutely. And with all those different roles kind of merged into one, as you said today, I imagine the weaving team is a little bit different now in size than perhaps it was back in the day.
We're quite a bit smaller. So for a little while it was just me and our senior weaver, and we've taken on a trainee. So from there on, we hope to eventually just keep the trade up, maybe build up the team a bit more. Obviously, the more weavers we have, the more woven fabrics we can have, the more we can sell, and the bigger the production can build up. And it's not just great for production to have that also, but as an experience for a visitor, that means that we've got opportunity for more machines to be ran. Because we're still technically in a factory setting, so we are still producing for a product and a customer, we can't just put on demonstrations. It depends on what process we're at. We can't just quickly put the winding frame on. It has to be dressed and it has to be woven into something, so it needs to mean something. But the more weavers we have, weaver tacklers we have, then the more the operation can go on. So there could be someone winding and someone warping and someone weaving, which means most things are operational. So not only is that great for us because it means production is up, but it's also great for our visitors that come to see us, because it's a lot more going on and you get to see the whole process as you go around, operational, as well as just, you know, being able to see it there in front of you. So,
and I suppose you're going to talk about this a bit later, but the process hasn't really changed at all, has it, in 200 years? So you still do the same things.
There's things obviously we've had to tweak, because as time's gone on, things have changed of how, you know, how things come into us as well. So, you know, like cones from bobbins, but again, like you say, we'll cover that. But yeah, it's little things have changed, but we try as much as we can to stick to the originals of how we're working, because the whole point is keeping the heritage. So if we don't keep up that, then we're kind of moving away from what we're about, really. So, and it's amazing feeling working on these machines that have been here all this time and they're still working as they would. So, we try to stick as close as we can to the originals, how it worked. So, yeah.
Amazing. And you mentioned earlier that it's a much smaller team. So in the past, there was probably around 187 people at one time working in that building, which is incredible, isn't it? And the noises and the things going on must have been immense. So maybe is it a bit quieter today?
Or? I mean, that's what I think. Because, I mean, literally the looms, we at best at the moment, we'll have two running at a time, maybe three. So to think about the entire floor that we work on, and that's a good fair few looms. I mean, there's less than there was. So you think about even 15 looms running or something, that's a lot of noise. And obviously now we've got ear protection to keep us safe and things like that. You know, we're conscious of that a bit more, but obviously back when that was all running like that, they wouldn't have had ear protection. So I doubt their hearing's all the best now. I mean, I honestly don't know how they hear anything, because it's so loud just with one loom running. So, and that's with ear defence on. Obviously, it keeps us safe and protected, but I can't even fathom what it would have been like to be in that room with all that noise. But I guess it's one of those things that you get used to. If that's your job, your day-to-day thing, then that's what you do.
So perhaps although you are doing the same things as people have done in the past, it's a very different experience today.
Yeah, and I guess the pressure's a bit different as well, because we've got that aspect of we're not just a factory anymore, we're a visitor attraction as well. We're not solely reliant on the weaving to keep production up, to keep people in, and also because we have to take our time a little bit with things. The looms are old, they're getting a bit tired, so we have to take care of them, and we have to make sure we're not, you know, if something goes wrong with them, we can't just ignore it and like bodge it back together and it'll go, because we really need to get this. Whenever we take on a customer, we have to make sure they understand that we do. It is a slow process for us, and we do have to take our time, because if we damage the looms beyond repair, then we can't use them anymore. So it little things happen, and we have to, oh, it's frustrating. You're like, oh, why does it keep doing this? But we have to take our time with it, be calm with it, and fix it, because if not, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Shannon, if a visitor came now, can they still see you in action?
Yeah, we're always doing something about the mill, but it completely depends on what stage in the process we're at. So if you came to visit, you could see us warping. We might be at the stage right at the beginning of the weaving process where we're warping and winding bobbins ready to go, but we might be already down to a process where we're threading the loom. So we could be sitting there threading it, or we could be at the point where we're weaving it. So it completely depends when you come up what point we are in the process of woven cloth. Obviously, because we're not a massive team, there is only a few of us, so we can't have everything going at once. So it really just depends on where I am and what I'm doing. But I'm always in the mill doing something, busy at something at some stage.
Okay, so I think it's like important to stress, isn't it, how long it takes you. Each part of the process, it takes a really long time.
Yeah, definitely. It can be on one process for a very long time. Some processes are quicker than others, but we could be at one stage for, like, especially the threading. It might not seem like we're doing a lot, but we are threading thousands of ends through individual little eyes and then through individual little dents. So it's a lot and a long process. So it might not look like we're doing much, but we are.
So obviously there is more to the mill than the weaving production side. So I'm now joined by Lisa Gale, who's our visitor experience manager. So Lisa, could you just tell us a little bit about, if a visitor came today, what sort of things they would see other than the weaving side?
Yeah, absolutely. So today we've got quite a varied experience. So you can come along, you could spend an hour, you could spend a whole day, depending on how much time you wanted to spend with us. But we can start off in our lovely shop and cafe, and we're right on the riverside. So we've got the river test that flows past, and there's some lovely seating that you can sit and enjoy a nice cup of tea and cake. But moving on from there, taking the visitor experience, you can explore the mill. We've got a whole lot of different things that you can see and do. So there's interactives that you can play, have a go and playing with. There's activities that children can do. There are oral history points, so you can stand and listen to workers from the past. There's a real range of different things in the mill itself. And then alongside that, we have our exhibition space. So about every 3 months, this changes. So we have a real variety of different people coming in and showing off different crafts and textiles and all things related to the mill. So there's always something different to see. So it's really worth coming back.
Brilliant. So I think tea and cake are going to be a big winner for a lot of people, aren't they? So
yeah, absolutely.
We've got some award-winning cakes, so it'll be fine. So you mentioned the shop. What sort of things do we sell in the shop?
Yeah, so we've got a great range of giftware, but not only that, we also have a lot of our own silk. So that might be silk scarves or products that have been made from the silk. And I think that's just really nice because if you've been around the mill, you've seen how the silk is made, but to actually see it in the shop and be able to buy and take home your own piece is just something really nice to do. Of course, we have a whole range of different things available for children, families, and our duck food is always really popular. I think our ducks are probably the fattest ducks in the whole area because they're always being fed. But yeah, there's a real selection of things for people to pop in and buy.
Lovely to actually probably have a bit of silk at your fingertips, isn't it? A bit of living history been woven. So that's something very special for people to take home.
Yeah, definitely.
Lovely. So if I've been once before, is there anything else for me to come back for?
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously, as Shannon mentioned, you might see a bit more of the weaving process, but alongside that, we do a range of special events as well. So we've got our winter lights that we hold every other year, and we're planning a weaving festival as well. That will be another biennial event. And we do lots of other things throughout, linked in with the local town and the community. So there's a lot happening. It's definitely worth keeping an eye on our website and seeing what's happening, what's coming up. Things like we have our monthly pins and needles group, crafting for adults, and all sorts of different things. So have a look and see.
So thank you so much, Lisa. That was really interesting, and it sounds like there's lots of exciting things going on at the mill for people to enjoy. And it feels like the mill's in a really good place as well at the moment, growing as a visitor attraction with lots of visitors coming around, which is absolutely fantastic, while also expanding the weaving team. So talking of which, I'm joined by Shannon and Olivia, who are going to talk about what a typical day at the mill looks like for them. And I'm joined by both of them now, and we are stood near the water wheel. So Shannon, could you just let us know what your first job of the day is?
Well, it's great that we're stood by the water wheel, because my day starts at the water wheel. So typically when we come in, I like to get myself over to the water wheel. Obviously it starts with opening up the doors, opening the gates up so the visitors can see into the water wheel, and then I need to turn the water wheel on. So I'll walk to the other end of the water wheel, where the sluice gates are. So typically when we don't have the water wheel running, all the water is going to be rushing around the side of the water wheel. So I need to direct that water into the front of the water wheel. So all the power is going up against the boards. So I'm going to close the sluice. So I'm pushing that water towards the water wheel, and then take myself down to the other end of the water wheel, where I'm met by a load of gears that are then going to work the gate up right near the gate, right near the water wheel. So as I'm measuring that, I'm lifting that gate up, watching this as the water wheel starts to move. I'm watching to see how fast it's coming. Because I want a nice steady even pace, so I'm kind of watching the water levels, letting that come through, and once I'm happy that it's at a good steady pace, I'm ready to let it do its job for the day.
Wow, that's fantastic. And that's quite a responsibility, isn't it, to do all of that, and quite a tough job.
Yeah, it's got a lot easier, obviously, with doing it time and time again, but obviously the water wheel demonstrates on the top floor, so all of the gears that work with the wheel then go up through the line shafting up to the top floor, where we still have today one piece of the winding frame, which is where we wind all our bobbins, that still operates on a demonstration purposes, so people can see how once upon a time when the water wheel was our sole power, that's how it operated. We do still use it, well, we can still use it on the winding frame that we use today, but we tend to stick to an electric motor. It's easier to control the water levels, we don't have to control water levels, which makes it so much easier, but we can use it. It's the only thing left in the mill that water wheel can still power, basically, is the winding.
That's really interesting, isn't it, that the water wheel, you know, 200 years ago was turning and powering all the machines, and it still does that today. That's quite special, isn't it, really?
Yeah, obviously it doesn't operate all of our looms and our winding warping mill. The looms are all motors now. But it's nice that we've still got that little bit left so that people can see how it would have operated back in its heyday.
Fantastic. And Olivia, can you just tell us, what do you do?
I'm a trainee weaver tackler. I've only just started a couple months ago. So I graduated from Winchester School of Art and fortunately got this job, which is great, and been really enjoying my time here. So what I do first is get the looms running. I've been learning about the warping mill mainly at the moment. So yeah, it's been great.
Wow, that must have been a bit of a whirlwind journey from university to the mill, and you're really enjoying it?
Yeah, really enjoying it. Yeah, it's great fun, very different from university, but it's been great learning all the historical machinery. Yeah,
fantastic. And the looms are quite different, aren't they, from what you're used to, perhaps?
Yeah, they're very different. At university, they're mostly digitally controlled, so like jacquards, and we've got arm looms that I was mostly using. But at Whitchurch Silk Mill, they're all very historical, tappets and dobbies, which I've never come across before. So it's been like having to learn all over again. But it's been really exciting.
So Olivia, could you tell us what your favourite part of the day is?
My favourite part of the day is running the looms and actually weaving, mostly on the tappet looms. That's one of my favourite parts of the machinery. I really enjoy working on the tappets.
Mm-hmm. And can you just tell us a little bit about what the tappet loom is? What does it look like?
The tappet loom is controlled. The shafts are on the side of the loom as opposed to the top. because with a Dobby loom, it's controlled by a Dobby chain, which is at the top of the loom, controlled by pegs and lags. Tappet looms, the patterns are a bit more restricted than a Dobby loom, but they're much more faster. They go so quickly, so especially when you're weaving, you've got to make sure the pattern doesn't run out, and you can make sure that your weaving is going all okay, but they go, I think, 30 miles per hour, so they go really quickly than a Dobby loom, but they're really exciting to use.
Wow, that is really fast, isn't it? 30 yeah. miles an hour. So the tappet loom is your favourite one, would you say?
Yeah, I would yeah. say so, yeah. Just because they go so much quickly, so quicker. So when you're weaving, you've got to make sure that it's all weaving okay by going to the back of the loom. We always say that you can weave just as good from the back of the loom as opposed to the front. So it's just a case of making sure that it's all weaving okay, that there's no broken threads. So because it weaves so quickly, especially when you're measuring your cloth, you've got to make sure that your pins don't go around the beam. So I just find it really exciting because it's like a sort of a race to see when the pattern's going to run out. And yeah, it's great fun.
It sounds quite full-on, actually, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And in your opinion, because you've used both Dobby and tappet looms, haven't you? So which one do you think is there one that's a bit better, or is it no competition, really?
I would say with a Dobby loom, you can do more like complex patterns. That can be quite fun to use, but at the moment, I've only just started mainly using the tappet loom. But to be honest, I find them both really like exciting to use, to see how they work. Especially because I'm a trainee weaver tackler, so I also will be learning more how to fix the machines if they go wrong. So yeah, quite exciting.
Brilliant. Okay, and I imagine the noise as well. So you're in the weaving shed. It's extremely noisy. Are you used to that, or is that a bit of a surprise?
It was a bit of a surprise. We do have to wear ear defenders, so they definitely help. But if you're just quickly running into the weave shed to get something and you don't have your ear defenders on, that can be a bit of a shock with the noise being quite loud. But yeah, I've definitely got used to it, so it's all good. My hearing's okay, so
good.
It's all good.
Okay, that was really interesting, thanks very much. So Shannon, same question to you, what's your favourite part of the day?
Well, I think every weaver loves the looms, but having recently started warping, I actually really enjoyed it. It was quite intimidating at first because there's so many points where you can go wrong, and it's not just going wrong, oh no, I've messed up the warp, but it's, oh no, I've just wasted a lot of money because silk is worth a lot of money. So it's one of those things. But I think once you get the flow of it, it's like, especially for a creator, it's like you're watching this build together before it even goes down onto the loom, and you're watching what was just a thread on a bobbin become a great big warp that you can envision going down onto looms and being woven. So it's a crucial part, because if that warp isn't right before it goes downstairs, there's no point in weaving it, and your woven silk isn't going to look anything nice or pretty or whatever, because you're going to have marks all over it. So it's really important, crucial part. The tension's got to be perfect, so it's like a sense of importance when you're doing it. You're like, oh, this bit's like, I'm doing this and I'm going to go downstairs and it's going to get woven and it's going to come out beautiful, and it's because I started here at this point where I've made the warp.
Oh, brilliant, that sounds lovely. And is there any particular part of your day that you find particularly surprising or unexpected?
I mean, any day can be a surprise. especially with the age of the machinery we're working on, so it can throw anything at you and you've got to be ready for it, and I think that's the exciting bit. You come in and you have no idea what you're going to be tackling, and then hence the term tackler. So but yeah, I literally, a loom could just decide, oh, you know what, today I'm not feeling it, I'm just going to throw something at you, and then you've got to go through this list of things, and you're ticking off in your head, and each time you tick something off you think, oh, that's something else I've recently learned. And it's yeah, it's been really exciting to do all of that. And yeah, like I say, anything, a surprise. Looms love to throw a surprise at us, and we've got to be prepared for it, basically.
Sounds a very, very responsible job. So we've just touched on some of the weaving processes that we do here, and we're going to be finding out more details about them in future episodes. But thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Shannon, we're going to be hearing more from you in future episodes, which would be fantastic. So don't forget to follow us on our socials, visit us when you can, and subscribe to our podcast series. See you again.